everybody. Good morning. Welcome, everybody. Everyone's here bright and early, recovering from the party last night, I suspect, yeah? I was in bed by 10 o'clock, so I knew I had to be here at 9 a.m. How to develop a successful desktop strategy. Thin client, thick client, VDI. I think that's been the big question over the past quite a few years. I was a MIS director at a hospital prior to Microsoft, a couple jobs prior to Microsoft. And I had vendors coming into my office every day saying, look, buy whatever I'm selling you and you'll have a lower TCO, right? The next vendor comes in the next week, says, no, don't buy what that guy says. Buy what I'm selling you and you'll have a lower TCO, right? And then you start going through the ROI calculators of every vendor, and they always come out with them on the top. The TCO calculators from every vendor, they come out at the top. I'm like, why is this? What's the truth in that? Because when we're talking about VDI, is it a TCO play? Is it an agility play? Is it both? We're talking about thin clients. It depends on who's on the other side of the desk talking to you. Microsoft plays in all those worlds. And with the research that I'm going to give you is we're really going to cut down through all the crap and give you the real truth behind a lot of these numbers. And then really from there, we're going to build on what does that strategy look like? What should be the proper strategy that gives you the agility and lowers TCO at the same time? Because usually agility costs you more money. You pay for that. You know, this evolving desktop. I think if we were sitting here 5-7 years ago, it was pretty easy what your desktop strategy would look like. You had rich client desktops. You deployed applications to those desktops. And you had a whole crew of people running around SneakerNet trying to fix those desktops. And then you started getting better policies and procedures and software and working on those machines in an automated fashion. But when we're really thinking about this, I like to think about this as the history of this desktop to figure out, you know, let's look at the past and not try to reinvent the past or use those same mistakes. Let's move forward with this. We think about this physical location of of our desk. We went to work, and that's where I sat and did all my work. Then we went to one fixed screen. We were pretty happy, and it was probably, depending on how long you're in the industry, maybe just a, you know, green screen, yeah? Well, then we went to, maybe I had a mobile screen, I had a laptop this last 5 to 7 years. I believe that the laptop sales have now, for businesses, out-escalated desktop sales. Now we've gone to end screens. I mean, how many of you traveled here today with more than one device? Like almost all of you. How many traveled here with more than two devices? I'm not even going to go past that. Four devices? No. Quite a few of us travel with, you know, three devices, or most of us travel with two devices. But now we're kind of getting into a place of this ubiquitous computing where end devices, and what I think is really interesting with that is we have all these devices out there. They're becoming more widely available, and they're cheaper. The focus is here on all these devices right now. I mean, the popularity of our device session yesterday was just crazy, right? So everyone's talking about these devices, the different form factors. We're really excited about them. And at Microsoft, we are super excited about all the ingenuity and capabilities that this new form factor is bringing to the computing environments. But we still have a lot of people out there in the industry, in the workplace, who have these one or two screens. But then we have probably, depending on what industry you're at, we have a whole bunch of workers out there who are just stationary, who don't really have this mobility and don't require the need for that. What's the solution around that? So we think about this. We can put these people into different buckets. You know, we've got our power users over here with all these devices. We've got most of our workers in today's office in this middle layer. Then we've got our task workers or deskless workers over there. And depending on the industry, you can kind of figure out where those users are, right? And I would say that bubble would move, you know, left or right. What's interesting and what's really scary at the same time is the people over here who have the most devices. Our power users with the most devices also provide the greatest security threat to your organization. It's kind of like a perfect storm. If I'm a hacker, if I'm someone who wants to do some corporate espionage, to get some intellectual property from that company, I'm going to attack these people who have all these devices because they also have access, they have the keys to the kingdom, if you were, with all this corporate information that I want from them. I think that's interesting. How do we accommodate that? What we've seen out there over the last 5 or 7 or 10 years is, you know, we have your current inventory. You have machines that are older than 7 years old, 4 years old, 3 years old. We have these new PCs, but we get this list of complaints from the users. And, you know, how many phone calls a day do you guys get? You know, I have a slow environment. I have application failures. It's complicated to manage. It's hard to update all these things. We also see that over time, my performance, you know, can go down. The lack of control. I lose control over these machines. My end user satisfaction is all over the place. In fact, without a lot of standardizations or a lot of best practices, when you deploy out a new operating system, how many minutes is that operating system different than the image that you deployed out there? I was traveling. I went through a tour of a Mercedes-Benz factory in Stuttgart, and I think this one factory did something like 300,000 Mercedes-Benz a year, and the tour guide said, out of all of those 300,000, he goes, guess how many were identical? 300,000, guess how many were identical? He said, four. Four were identical. I'm like, my God. And then I started thinking about our computing environment, our desktops. How many of your desktops are identical? None, right? And there could be reasons why there's none. I'm not saying that's a bad idea thing. I'm just saying it's kind of a reality that things kind of change. Well, how do we accept that change? But what have we done to kind of counteract this? How do we get more control over a new PC? How do we get better performance over a new PC? You know what we've been doing? We've been buying more PCs, right? Oh, your PC's slow. I'll just get you a new PC, right? Is that kind of what happens? Yeah? I need some validation here. Thanks. Well, that's kind of mad, right? There's got to be a better way to do that. We also look at these different choices that you have for your desktop environments, VDI, thin client on an old PC, a diskless smart client, a managed client, a pocket PC or a PDA or a phone, something like that. One of the things I really like to talk to customers about is, look, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Some of them run some applications. Some of them don't run other applications. And if your application doesn't run on that form factor or on that device, you can't use that device. I mean, that's pretty simple. Do businesses run on operating systems, or do they run on applications? Applications. So if that application doesn't run, then I can't use that, obviously. So we think about, look, it's not a one-size-fits-all. We've got to have an objective view of the architectures, and you'll probably have one of all of these, maybe, in your environment. So we take a look at this a little bit differently then. We say, okay, you're considering VDI, you're considering terminal services, you're considering using more smartphones. I want you to start thinking about your staff and their minimum technical expertise as far as a directory, storage management, network bandwidth. And if we take a look at a smart client, my proficiency levels. Now, this is something a colleague and I just kind of, you know, thought it's pretty reasonable. It's not scientific up here, right? But it seems pretty reasonable. I mean, if I have, like, how many of you do network bandwidth management on your rich clients? Yeah. Oh, we have one. Perfect. Thanks. Right? But it's not. I mean, so you kind of see how this flows. Now, as we move to like a remote desktop with terminal services, my expertise level dramatically changes. Like monitoring of server, you would do more in-depth monitoring a server, a terminal server, than you would a client machine, depending on your industry. Right? But it's like, is your staff ready to go down this path? That's kind of really what's more interesting. As we move to VDI, we can see there's differences, like my application certification testing is easier on VDI than it is on terminal services, because in terminal services, it's a shared desktop or a shared OS that's kind of spin off. And if I make a change on my application, I got to make sure that it can work in a shared memory space where in VDI, it's kind of more isolated, so it makes it a little easier over there. But you kind of get the idea, right? And as we move to phones, it's even different. It's a different level of expertise. And is your staff ready for that expertise? That's all we're talking with our customers about. Are you guys ready for this? You're looking at doing this. You're looking at signing a pretty big check for VDI. Are you guys ready to do this? That's what's interesting, I think. Well, what's also interesting is when is thin client an option? Thin client's been around for a long, 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 long time. They never really took off. In fact, if you really take a look at the marketplace, they never really gained more than 1% market share, according to IDC. But if we have a server-based, you know, desktop, VDI sessions, you know, we have a scenario of a hybrid scenario, local desktop plus a hosted desktop or a local desktop plus hosted applications. Run that from a Windows PC. If we're taking a look at pure server-based desktop, then a Windows PC or thin client. We've made some advances in our licensing to make that a little bit easier as we're going through. And we have the unmanaged devices, a really great alternative to use a VDI or some kind of a terminal services from that unmanaged client, because then we can have some isolation, better security around that. That just kind of makes sense. I almost like to think of that as, you know, pay someone once and pay someone again. You have this unmanaged client, okay, you pay for that. Someone pays for it. Then you got a VDI, and you pay for that again. Why not just have a managed client? I don't know. Do whatever you want. But the truth about TCO, I think this is fascinating. Now, remember the story when I was an IT manager, I had these vendors coming into me every week. My job at Microsoft, I had the privilege to look through Gartner articles. I went through 10 years of Gartner articles. I wanted to know the truth about TCO, and what I found out was pretty interesting. 2001. The very top bar is an unmanaged client. Gartner said there is a huge difference between TCO and an unmanaged client versus a managed client, which is the next bar down. In 2001, Gartner said in the call out there was very little difference in TCO between a managed, rich client and a thin client with terminal services. And I thought, that doesn't feel right. I mean, just down in my stomach, down in my gut, that just didn't feel right. It just seems like terminal services and then client would have to be a lot cheaper than this rich client desktops. In fact, this article even said the migration cost, which is the next one down, wasn't worth the ROI of the TCO benefit. That's quite a few acronyms. Okay, but you know, it didn't feel right, so I kept researching. 2004. Gartner started to standardize in the way they did their analysis of TCO. Unmanaged client, typically managed client, well-managed client, and a well-managed terminal services. In fact, a lot of executives, they say, Jeff, if you talk to me about indirect costs, I'm going to throw you out the door. Okay, in 2004, a well-managed rich desktop had a lower direct cost TCO than terminal services. Lower! By the way, consumerization of IT, I would put that right there in the unmanaged space. Right? If you're looking at bring your own PC or whatever like that, a lot of these executives, especially executives who are maybe starting to retire, and all they want to do is go out with a great bang and a big bonus check. And they're saying, all I got to do is cut, you know, a couple million dollars off my P&L. I'm going to make everyone bring their own PC to work. I'm going to cut that line item off of my budget, and I got to go out as a hero. What did they do there? They just took that indirect cost, and they transferred it, either direct or indirect, and transferred it over to the employee. But did they transfer it away from the company? No, the company still is enduring a greater cost. Just that P&L of that executive didn't. 2006. Look, the numbers aren't changing, just the graphs are getting better. Right? Well, then Gartner went to Open Office. Ah, just kidding. But in 2008, Gartner stopped analyzing the difference between thin and thick client, because TCO is about manageability. Period. Almost. Let me break this apart. Let me break this down. When is it not? When is TCO not about manageability? Well, I have a customer in Canada. They have this logging company, and their line of business application requires network connectivity, period. There's no offline state of this application that these loggers need. They have these remote logging sites that take a bush pilot 5 hours to drive to the Northern Territory of Canada. Well, since they have to have network connectivity, it was infinitely cheaper for them to have a thin client out there because they had no IT support, and if they had a rich client with all the dust, the dirt that failed, they'd have to fly someone out there 5 hours, give them a new PC, fly back. How does that affect your TCO? Whereas the thin client would probably last longer because of that hostile environment. So we can poke holes in this, but in a generality, it's pretty much TCO is about manageability. The better you manage it, the lower the TCO. Okay. Then I ask you a question. How well do you manage your environment today? If TCO is about manageability, and if you're getting really frustrated in the cost of your rich desktops, and you're looking for an alternative, and that alternative is to go thin client, or your alternative is to buy new PCs, first you want to ask yourself, how well do you manage? Well, what do you mean by that, Jeff? I think it means these things: image management, patch management, hardware, software inventory, OS to app deployment, application lifecycle. I've asked this to over 200 executives face-to-face. Mr. Executive, which one of these things do you do best, and which one of these things do you do worst? The best one's always kind of all over the place. About 95% of them answer the worst one. You want to take a guess? Application lifecycle. Who said that? Who thought that? Application lifecycle is really the one people struggle with the most. But as we're looking at this, as we're looking at the different architectures, which of these processes change when I go from rich to thin? Or to VDI to terminal services? Which of those processes change? None of them. Some of them get easier, some of them get harder, but then none of them change. You still have to do all of those things. Is it cheaper on the desktop or cheaper on the server? It depends there. Gartner says the biggest TCO factor is going to a well-managed lockdown machine. 36% reduction in TCO by basically removing admin rights from your PCs. Now, I'm not saying that's easy, right? There could be political things around that. There could be application things around that. 36% TCO by just removing. Do you know something? There's a statistic I read. It was something like 94% of IE6 vulnerabilities would have no effect on the client computer if they were not logged on as an administrator or power user. Jeez, really? That number is very important for you to remember. Hopefully you guys are all been briefed on the infrastructure optimization model. This is the model where we survey our customer and we figure out where they are in the maturity of their IT department. We have a lower reduction in TCO all the way to rationalize. When we go over here to dynamic, TCO goes up a little bit, because if I was like an Amazon.com or an internet retailer or something like that, I would spend more money. I wouldn't focus as much on TCO because I need that true agility to handle those peak loads on demand. So that's a different kind of a business model. But most people try to get to that rationalize. If you're not familiar with the infrastructure optimization model, I would say do the research on Microsoft.com. Get some more information from the salespeople. This is a fantastic tool. We've surveyed over 16,000 customers worldwide. And actually, out of that survey, most of them are landing in basic or starting to go into standardized. Most of the people around the world are still over there. They're pretty deficient in this. It's pretty sad, actually. We're moving from this desktop strategy to a flexible work style. Why? To lower cost and increase agility. What? I thought agility would cost me more. It doesn't have to, actually. You think about the OSI model. Here's my OSI model, and as we look at all of the different dependencies between the OSI model, where is most of your cost associated with that? Where's the most, when you're thinking about all your desktop help desk calls, at what layer of the OSI are they happening right now? I would guess, I would say from what I've experienced, if we're talking XP, XPSP1, maybe into XPSP2, I had a lot of driver issues. It was lower down the stack, yeah? I would say what I've been dealing with over the last 3 or 5 years, app to app and app to OS, yeah? All right, well, think about this for a second. If I'm looking at VDI, what does VDI solve? What does VDI virtualize as far as my dependencies? It solves the problem between my OS and the hardware, doesn't it? That's what it's doing. Is that where my costs are? No. We just said, and I think you probably agreed with me, my costs are higher up, app to app and app to OS. All right, let's look at this a little differently then. Let's take a look at all the virtualization technologies. You might have seen this slide before, but I'm going to put a different spin on this, something you've never seen before. When I take a look at user state virtualization, the very top one, what does that do? Well, that's user state virtualization is in the form of folder redirection and roaming profiles. I'm a bigger fan of folder redirection. I don't find a lot of business cases for roaming user profiles, unless we're really in a terminal services type environment, truly. Because what's the business case that my picture follows me from this computer to that computer? It's not really a business case for that, okay? It's nice to have. We've made some advances on that in Windows 7, but it's a good technology if you have a business case for it. But folder redirection, getting the data off the machine, what does that do to my OSI model? Folder redirection separates the data from the operating system. It separates that. At a business value, what does that mean to your business people? It means you can log on to any computer in your environment, and your data will follow you. Your data will follow you. Now, your first thing that you're thinking is, wait, I tried this in XP, and it sucked. Is that what you did? And we rolled it back. All right, fair enough, right? Under Windows Vista, we fixed that, and we rolled that forward to Windows 7. What do you mean? The default policy synchronization under Windows XP was, when I was offline in my offline cache. When I was online, I still used my offline cache, and I synchronized it log on and log off. So if you have a few gig of information, you're trying to go home, your neighbor calls you because your dog just bit their kid, and you're trying to go home, and it's synchronizing. You're like, and he goes, close your laptop, and you run away. Right? Under Windows Vista, now with Windows 7, when you're offline, you're offline. When you're online, and online is determined on a group policy of a network speed. When I'm online, I use the online copy. My synchronization is a delta difference synchronization in the background task. It's not at log on and log off. It's delta difference synchronization. 10 meg file, 1K change, 1K as it goes across the wire. Windows Vista was 2.5 times faster on the wire than Windows XP, so we're faster on the wire and easier on the wire. We fixed this. It's time to relook at this. This is a huge piece of everything else we're going to show you today. The next one down, application virtualization, app V. What is that designed to do? It's designed to separate apps from other apps. Application isolation. The side benefit of that is rapid deployment. I can deploy Office in like 10 seconds to a machine that's never been there. Therefore, if I have rapid deployment and application isolation, I can target applications to users, not computers. Target them to users. So therefore, if I log on to this computer, my applications are there. If I walk over and log on to this computer, because it's me, my applications follow me over here. And my data. Oh, wait. I got my applications and my data. What else do I need? Okay, pretty cool. And because of application isolation, I don't really have to care what other applications are on that machine. I could have done this with System Center 2003 or SMS. but I had to wait for an MSI installation the whole time before I log on. That wasn't very fun. If I'm installing Office that way, I'm waiting for like a half hour, 40 minutes. All right. Remote applications, like a terminal server remote app or a Zen app, if you're a Citrix shop. It separates applications from operating systems. It truly separates apps from OSs. You could run that application on any operating system if you have the right RDP client down there. Well, that's interesting. I can run that from my iPad. I can run that from my Linux box, my Apple Mac box, my consumerization of PC box. It just runs, right, because it's running remotely. The next one down is a remote desktop. A remote desktop of terminal services separates the OS from the hardware. A remote desktop from the server separates OS from the hardware, right? I'm doing a remote desktop that people are kind of sharing into, and that's what VDI does. That's what VDI does. All right, let's put this all together. Put my computer right in the middle there. There's my PC. That's cool. My PC has an OSI model. It has hardware that's embedded, that's linked up to the operating system. But when I log on, my data comes to my physical machine. Or if I log on to a remote desktop, my data goes over there. Or if I log on to VDI, my data goes over there. My data is transcending physical and virtual. If I log on, my applications come from terminal services to my rich client, to my remote, my virtual desktop on terminal server and on VDI. My remote app might backfill onto my physical, onto my VDI, or on my terminal server. See, I'm associating application deployment and data with me, not the computer that I happen to be sitting at. I can transcend the physical to virtual. Did your mind just explode right now? It's awesome, right? Well, how else can we solve that? Now, if I have application compatibility, and I don't want to minimize how hard that is or how easy that is, but if we have application compatibility, it's like this. I have XP today, and I want to go to Windows 7. Okay, I go to Windows 7. Or if I want to transcend physical to virtual, I go over there, and everything just follows me. I'll show you that in my demo. These next three slides are the slides that VMware does not want me to show you. You guys are a savvy crowd. You might blow my little game here, but we'll see. Name this desktop. What OS is this? Look how gorgeous that is. The Porsches in the background. What OS is that? Maybe. Okay, don't blink. This is an entirely different operating system. Those are two operating systems. All right, I'll put them side by side. I used to say, I'm going to show you this one, and then I'm OS 1, and then I'm going to show you OS 2. I couldn't say that, right? So I'm like, okay, no. I'm going to show you OS 1 and the next operating system. Wait, no, I couldn't say that either, right? The first one, you're right over here. Who said that? We got a big prize for you. No, just kidding. Server 2008 R2. Oh, my God, that's beautiful. The next one is Windows 7, a VDI, or a rich client. Wait a second. Terminal services looks just like it? Yeah. With themes installed and the Aero service installed. And guess what? Windows RDS, that one, is up to, and actually a little bit more than, 5 times the scalability as VDI. Wait a sec. What? Wait. How'd you come up with that number, Jeff? Okay. Most VDI environments worldwide in a production environment get about 6 to 8 desktops per core. Is that about what you guys are getting in a production environment? I'm seeing a lot of heads, yeah. I have some customers who get 12. I have some customers who get 2. It kind of depends on what you are doing on that. But in most, I'm very comfortable saying 6 to 8, and I don't care whose hypervisor you're using, it's about the same. Terminal services, 25 to 30 users per core. 25 to 30 users per core. Now, this is really interesting. When I'm talking to an executive saying, look it, you know, great, go VDI, I don't care. Go terminal services, I don't care. Terminal service is going to cost you less. When's the last time a vendor said, buy less from me, not more. I mean, I'm a Microsoft shareholder. I should be selling the hell out of VDI. If I have scalability like that, we're trying to figure out what's the right solution for you, not just sell you a bunch of stuff and walk away. What's the right solution for you? Well, this is how we've kind of evolved to this flexible work style. We're going into saying, we know you're going to have all of these things. What's the appropriate thing to have? You have all these challenges that are out there. You're trying to figure out, how do we provide anytime access? How do we fuel users' passion? How do we keep the system data safe? How do we streamline operations? How do we do all of these things? Well, it's through a solid strategy of isolating those layers of the OSI model, managing the state, dynamically delivering the state down to that user, not computer. When we're doing this, we're taking a look at unified management, like Config Manager with Forefront. It's pretty interesting, in the 2012, now we can say, here's an application that you need. You need this application. I'm going to point to you, okay? Is that all right? You need it, but when you log on to a rich client desktop, not a laptop, a desktop, I'm going to deliver that application to you via MSI. But maybe you log on because of restrictions or because of like network bandwidth, I can't deploy that through an MSI on your laptop because you're remote, so I'm going to give it to you through an app V, maybe. Or you come in from another kind of a device, another vendor, but you still need it, I'm going to deploy it down to you through remote desktop services. The point is, you need the application. Point is, I can make these choices on, it's the same application, but it's a delivery mechanism that you get. That's huge. We take a look at work on your own device. This person, they love their Slate device. Well, we can put the Slate out there, whether it's Windows or not, and we can then connect through the firewall into that VDI instance that has my applications. And in this case, we have maybe Office 365 outside in the cloud. Because I might have an application that is sensitive in nature that I don't want to expose out onto that device, so I keep it on VDI. But for the most of what they do day in and day out is maybe email, calendar, contact, Word, PowerPoint, things like that, SharePoint, that will be up on Office 365 in the cloud that they could just natively get to. They don't have to go through the VDI, but the extra layer of security and isolation, I go through VDI through my VPN system. See how that works? And it's kind of nice now that we're laying this out for the executives. And where is it? Is it in the cloud or is it behind my firewall? And why and when? If we take a look at personalization, I have this guy here. He loves his user settings, his apps, and his data. They go over there to that device, but when he gets a new device, a new Windows device, they just show up on his new machine. If it's device proliferation we're talking about, you have a desktop and a laptop, or a desktop and a Slate, how do we get that personalization, the data and the applications over there? App V, user profiles, and folder redirection just brings all that stuff over. We're seeing a less reliance, like on tools such as user state migration. What does user state migration do? It takes your state and migrates it over. Well, that's pretty important in like an XP to a Windows 7 migration if we're using profiles, because I have to migrate that profile. That's why profiles to me are not totally virtualization, because it is dependent on the version of the operating system, right? It's a kind of a cool when I'm within one operating system, but for me to migrate from one to the other, I have to change that structure of that profile. And I can't go backwards either, whereas folder redirection, I can go forward or backward for versions of the operating system. When I think about working on the road, this person is kind of unique, actually, because we have some devices that have this mobile broadband. In fact, I think this is one of the things that we need to really take a look at. You do a lot of work today with quarantining. You do a lot of work today with network access protection, things like that. But you're still thinking about, I have a device on a network, and now I have devices that are coming in your environment that are multi-homed. They're on your network, but they're also on the cellular network at the same time. They're multi-homed. That's something we need to start addressing, trying to figure out how to work with that. But something as easy as direct access to be able to be on the road and connect into those resources that are behind my firewall, like SharePoint Exchange and data services for my machine. How many of you have ever experienced direct access on yourself on a laptop? It is amazing. Is it amazing? It truly is amazing. And I encourage you all to stand up a POC on that, because once you give that to an executive, you can't turn it off, right? Absolutely. I highly recommend doing that. But with this person, what's interesting is, because we try to work with work-life balance, right? So his work is all over here, but then, oh, he might have Link coming through there also, but then SkyDrive for the personal information is over there. So as this person goes from their work PC to their home PC, they can have that same personal information being shared across both because they have that data source up in the cloud. Pretty interesting. As we take a look at working from the phone, having Exchange and SharePoint and Link in the future coming down that phone, absolutely wonderful. Office 365 coming down that phone, absolutely wonderful. Being able to start working on these more devices and having access to all that information that I want and that I need also. We take a look at cloud management. I love Windows Intune, and I see this as a great play for consumerization of IT also. I have a device that's a non-asset of my company, but I put an Intune agent on that device, and then now I have all the abilities, capabilities of SA, and with a dollar more, I think it's with MDOP on that device. Think about this. You have somebody who has a laptop that say, you know what, I can afford a really nice laptop. I make a lot of money, and I can afford this Samsung 9 series. That's awesome, great, you know. I don't like what you gave me. I'm going to put an Intune agent on this or have an Intune license on this. I'm going to put a corporate build of Windows Enterprise on this, so your corporate image. I'm going to put on this. I'm going to have App V on this. Great. I'm working. A year goes by. I find a better gig. I take my laptop with me, right? Windows Enterprise Edition needs to activate after, what, 180 days? And starts giving me worries. It says, you need to put your other build on there. I wouldn't say that, but that's what I have to do. I have to put my OEM build back on here. App V stops working after, what, 90 days? So as a businessman, I can reclaim those licenses. It's not being used anymore. That employee didn't take my license with them, and I turned off the Intune agent on that client. That's huge. So that protects me and gives me that flexibility. We take a look at the VDI infrastructure. Microsoft's doing wonderful work on VDI, and we're very committed to VDI. And with other things like the dynamic memory, being able to stand up more devices. In fact, where I love VDI is, how many of you are a developer at some point in your life at all? You remember how long it took you to install your development tools on a brand new PC? Like a full day, if not two, right? Can you imagine just connecting to a VDI instance and it's a brand fresh copy is there every time you start a new project? Huge. Huge for that instance. Well, let's see what's possible today. Now, I'm not a very smart guy, but I created this demo myself. We're going to take a look at what's possible when we start analyzing, or excuse me, managing state. I'm going to manage state. I'm still going to kind of manage the PCs, but if I really focus on that user and data state, and the application state, what can I do? Well, here's my PC. This is a little XP machine. It has my applications on it. There's my, you know, I have Office 2003. I have Link. I have Adobe on this machine. I have my documents are there. You know, I'm working away just like I've always done. Da-da-da-da-da. And all of a sudden, this guy, Eduardo, he's like, hey, Jeff. We want you to move into this flexible workspace. I'm like, well, what? I don't even know what that is. But it sounds good. It says, we've already configured your data for virtualization. I don't know when this happened, but whatever. He says, go to the properties of my documents folder, and we'll see that my data has been copied up to that server, whack, whack, DC, whack, you know, data, whatever that was. Oh, okay. Here he comes again. will now give you access to new Contoso applications. This is kind of like dipping my toe into the new operating system with the new applications without destroying my old applications on my machine. He says, go to this remote programs folder, but I don't have a remote programs folder. If I open up my programs, there's no remote programs folder there. Eduardo didn't do his job. Well, wait a second. He's just not done with his job. So here's Eduardo. He goes into Jeff's user account and Active Directory. There it is. That's cool. He looks at the group membership. He's a domain users group and a group called New Applications. Here's the app V console, and here's a folder called Applications New, and it has these new applications, 2010. We're just going to enable all of those applications. Now, what's interesting here is these are not app V applications. These are just remote app RDP applications delivered through app V. What? It's okay. I could have done it through app V. Directly. Here's a remote app for IE8. Remember, I'm on an XP machine, and I'm going to look at my application compatibility testing with IE8, even though my machine on the left has IE6, because remote app for IE8 is running on the terminal server. I'm looking into the future, because when I go to Windows 7, I'm going to have IE8 or IE9. Right? I'm dipping my toe into the future, and I can also run Office 2010 at the same time from that terminal server. But I haven't destroyed anything of my current build of XP. Remember, I'm dipping my toe into the future. Well, what he says here is, hey, look at, he's like, Jeff, here's the next one. We did an inventory on your computer, and we see that you have Office 2003 and Adobe, and all the Office products. So when you go to Windows 7, we're going to give you the ability to look backwards at your old applications, yet have the new applications. You want to get to Windows 7, don't you? Yes. Okay, here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to add myself to a member of a group called New Applications. I don't care. You call them whatever you want to call them. I'm just calling for demo purposes, New Applications. It could be sales group. People, whatever, right? In that, we have remote IE6. What? I'll explain that in a second. We have an app V app for Adobe Reader and all my Office 2003 applications on that. That's interesting. Well, because app V can tell that I'm on an XP machine, it's not going to deploy those to XP. It's only going to deploy those to Windows 7 because that's the way I set it up in my configuration file. Well, that's cool. All we got to do now is just log off and log on. Oh, wait, here's that synchronization we talked about earlier. Oh, God, you're trying to go home, and that's just a couple files. No. Yeah. I know it's early in the morning. Way too early to whine, right? So that was interesting. That's XP. Here we're logged in as administrator. So what I wanted to show you here is this has Office 2010 installed on it. It has Link installed on it. It doesn't have 2003. It does not have Adobe. It does not have a folder called Remote Programs on it. And we can see here that Contoso Jeff has never logged on to this computer before at all. So basically the scenario is you had XP. I've targeted my application deployment to you, not the computer. I've replicated your data. I just tossed your machine. I chucked it into the ocean. I gave you a new machine. And here you go, right? So here's that brand new machine. Let's log off this computer, and let's log on as Jeff. Okay. Switch users here. Because the Active Directory now is going to say, oh, Jeff's data is in the cloud, I don't have to synchronize that before I give him access to a UI. I just point him to there, and he logs on. There's Jeff's data on the desktop. Yay. Right? It was that fast. I didn't have to synchronize that down because I'm using the data up on the server. There's remote programs. There's an Avalon patient monitoring. There's a remote app for IE6. We'll talk about that. Here's Office 2003 and Office 2010. 2003 and 2010 are from AppV. I don't have application compatibility. Remember that the 360 of virtualization, app-to-app isolation, allowed me to run both versions of Office at the same time on the same machine? Absolutely, no worries. Here is was that remote IE6? And then let's launch a local copy of IE8 or IE9, probably IE8, right? Side by side. Now what I'm doing here is this copy over here. Now that could come from a Citrix environment from 2003. What I'm doing here is a little trick called remote app for Hyper-V. It's an XP instance on Hyper-V that I'm just bringing up the IE instance from that VDI Hyper-V image on XP. Whoa. There's a whole Q article on how to do that. It's pretty interesting. Well, we can do that with terminal services, too, under 2003 with Citrix or with Quest. Here's Office 2010, and let's bring up Office 2003 side by side. We're going to do that? Oh, no, we're not going to do that. Ah, printers. God, I love this. Printer deployment. Here's a group policy. Here's a group policy for Singapore that says if you're in Singapore, deploy that printer. Okay, that's interesting. But this group policy says if you're in Redmond, deploy this printer. So I'm going to enable that group policy. It's a group policy deployment of a printer. What? Bang, the printer just gets installed because I'm in that subnet through group policy. Oh, wait, that's what? That's interesting. Okay, now this says, hey, Jeff, we need you to go to Singapore. Okay, but they have a group, they have a policy of a power management policy. Don't worry, we'll configure that for you. They're also going to change the desktop background and change my printers because I don't know how to change my printers. No worries. So this is the printer for Singapore. Remember, it's the 2700. Remember that. Here's a policy that says my wallpaper is going to change because I travel a lot, and I don't know where I wake up until I log on to my computer and the background changes and says, you're in Singapore, right? Yeah. It's not because of the party last night. It's and here's the power management group policy. Because I'm in Singapore, because I'm in the subnet of Singapore, we land. Here I am at the office in Singapore. I log on. It changed the background to Singapore. Now I know where I'm at. Oh, what about the printers? Let's go into the printers. 2700? Yep, the printer changed automatically. Now I can print to that printer. I could have left the old printer, added a new printer, and changed the default one. I could have left the default one. One time I was at home, did my tax return, hit file print, and it went to the office. Whoa, you know, right? But I could change that through group policy also. Well, that was interesting, but if it continues. I fly home. On the way home, I lost my laptop, and I went to the office and logged on to a thin client. Here's a WinFlip. It has 128 megs of RAM on this thin client PC. It's just a thin, now we have a thin Windows thin PC, but this could be a XP embedded, it could be a thin PC, whatever. It's logged on as kiosk. I launch into a browser. I authenticate as me, as Jeff. There's the applications that me, Jeff, should run. I'm on a thin, but if you logged on here, you'd see different applications associated to you. I'm going to launch into this. I'm going to re-authenticate because now I'm going to a different server in the background. And I'm going to launch Outlook. I'm launching Office-type applications. I'm launching third-party applications. But these are the applications that are associated to me. It's not that I'm doing a thin client rollout. It's not that I'm doing a VDI rollout or a rich client desktop rollout. It's I'm managing state. I'm managing state of the data, managing state of the applications. I'm doing dynamic delivery of applications and data to the user, not the computer necessarily. I mean, it gets there to the computer, but it's targeted to the user. It's all user-based, user-centric deployment of applications and data. What a concept. I would say that the user piece really got us there. Now, here's a whole desktop, right? I launched into a whole desktop for my terminal services. That's kind of cool. Yep, Eduardo, I made it back. Thanks. Well, that's interesting. Wait. I went from XP to Windows 7 to terminal services, and there's Office 2003, Office 2010, Adobe, and all my data. I transcended those applications from different versions of an operating system to even physical to virtual, and there's my printer that's in that subnet back in Redmond. You think about your PCs that are out there, and you're managing these things. Why is that costing you money? Because you're managing these things. I'm saying, let's manage the state that's on these things. And give me the agility. Let's look at the cost. Cost is about management. But let's bring the scenario one step further now. Let's go home. Let's close all these out. And let's go to my home PC. We'll be done here in just two more minutes, and you hit the next session. Here's my home PC. I'm on a tablet PC, and I'm just, you know, reading some stuff. Life's good. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I need to do some work, right? I'm at home. I'm on my home PC. Where's that VPN card? No, I don't need a VPN in. No, that's old technology. Direct access is awesome, but I wouldn't let this machine have direct access. Would you let your mom's PC VPN in or have direct access into your environment? Not no, but hell no, right? So I'm going to a secure website. This is an SSL website. Again, I'm going to log on as me, as Contoso Jeff, on SSL. Do we trust SSL? I sure hope so. You guys use home banking, don't you? Right? These, again, it's the same website I was at when on my thin client inside my network. Now I'm at home accessing that same thing. I'm going to launch into now a virtual desktop, a VDI instance. I thought VDI was so cool. It's like just another desktop. Guess what? There's my data. There's my applications. I just transcended you. I just gave you a stepping stone, a journey where all of your data and applications went from XP to Windows 7 to Server 2008 R2 to now VDI with Windows 7. I just gave you a migration path. I just gave you true agility. I just gave you a way to lower cost of your environment. This is truly amazing. We have customers all around the world who have been adopting this. I think one of the biggest key breakthroughs of all of this was actually starting with Windows Vista and was with the new way we handle the data synchronization, folder redirection. And there's all my stuff. Pretty interesting, eh? What'd you think about that? You like that? Yeah. I love that. And I'm not very smart, and I created that. And I have all my sources and reference. I can't give you all the Gartner articles because those are copyrighted and protected under the Gartner agreements. But if you have access to Gartner and IDC and Forrester, I give you all my reference. You know what? All what I said, don't believe me. Go research all this. This is all truth. But be cynical enough to challenge me. There's all my research. Go ahead and do it yourself. Thank you very much for today and our last day of Tech Ed. I'll be around. I'll also be down in the booth, and I'll answer questions over here. Have a good rest of your day.